Okay, as we are on the cusp of the 9 days starting, the schedule is for them to start tomorrow night in less than 24 hours. I wanted to discuss a topic that is quite controversial, that really attracts a lot of passion and a lot of negativity as well. And yet it's something which is pretty pervasive among Klal Yisrael at this point, although maybe that itself is arguable. And that has to do with the practice of making siyumim over the course of the 9 days. And in the course of those siyumim, therefore eating meat and wine. And this, as indicated, is a controversial practice. If we had enough time, I think we probably won't, if we had enough time, I'd like to talk about it in parallel with the practice of siyumim on Erev Pesach to allow the Bechorim to eat. But the truth is that has its own set of details. It's really worthy of its own separate discussion. I don't think we really will have a chance to talk about that tonight also. But there are certainly many overlapping concepts, and we'll touch upon those a little bit. But what's also interesting to note just at the outset is there's controversy surrounding both of them. But I think certainly Bizman Hazeh, the controversy is much greater regarding the 9 days than Erev Pesach. When it comes to Erev Pesach, it's become pretty accepted nowadays that there are siyumim taking place and that the Bechorim, for the most part, are not fasting. It's pretty much the air across the board in Klal Yisrael. You see this done without really any objection anymore. When it comes to siyumim over the 9 days, so there's a much greater level of opposition. It's much more controversial. So it seems like even though there's a lot of common ground between the two, they are not treated equally. And it seems like there is much more negativity about siyumim in the 9 days. Now, it's interesting from a source perspective, so there's a little bit of a discussion as to how to compare the two. And there are actually some Makoros that suggest that is actually a greater chumrah when it comes to Erev Pesach. So there's a tshuva about this in the Sefer Meishuv Shalom, where he talks about the question of whether it's enough to learn a Maseches of Mishnayos. Nowadays, we generally assume that in order to qualify for a siyum, so it's got to be a Masechta of Gemara or a Seder of Mishnayos, possibly also a Sefer of Tanakh as well. Rav Moshe and others have tshuvas if it's a serious project, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But at least as far as Torah Sheba'al Peh, so we generally assume it's either a Masechta with Gemara or a Seder with Mishnayos. It's a question why that should be when the Gemara talks about a Siyum. That is presumably a reference to learning Mishnayos because they didn't have Gemara written down yet. So presumably they were talking about learning a Seder of Mishnayos. So there's some discussion as to why can't we also assume that a Seder of Mishnayos should be enough. So some explain it's calibrated towards the simcha of finishing something. So however that is defined is the simcha. So when there was just Mishnayos around, so then finishing the Masechta meant finishing the Mishnayos. Now that there is Gemara, so finishing the Masechta means finishing it with the Gemara. Others explain, which is maybe a little bit closer to the mark, that in the time of the Gemara, they were going through all the discussions that would be written down. So when they learned a Masechta of Mishnayos, it meant through the course of their discussing it, they were going through the content that would eventually become our Gemara. So therefore, for us to have a learning experience that's equivalent, we'd have to learn the Masechta with the Gemara as well. So in any event, there is a lot of discussion about this, and we'll say a little bit more about it, time permitting. But there's an interesting tshuva. The Meishuv Shalom writes that he thinks really a Seder Mishnayos should be enough. That's the indication from the Gemara. But the minig seems to be more machmir of having a Seder of, having a Masechta of Gemara. And he writes that the minig, just from his empirical experience, is to be more machmir for Erev Pesach than it is for the 9 days. So it's the opposite of the impression we have that there's a greater threshold in order to allow eating on Erev Pesach. And there's some who explain the Shuvas Beis Avi explains that that idea is because there's more of a source for the notion of fasting on Erev Pesach than there is for abstaining from meat and wine over the course of the 9 days. Both of them are really post-Talmudic for the most part, a little bit of mixture of Talmudic and post-Talmudic, but when it comes to the fast on Erev Pesach, so it's in the Masechta Sofer. So that's considered to be a little bit more of a source than the idea of not eating meat during the 9 days. So that's how he explains why we'd have a higher threshold, we'd be more demanding on Erev Pesach than we are during the 9 days. Again, it's not the way we normally think about it. So presumably, the fact that that's not our attitude today, and that we more unanimously accept Erev Pesach Siyumim and the 9 days Siyumim more controversial, probably has to do a lot with how it relates to the spirit of the law. And that there seems to be a feeling that there's a greater clash between what's happening in the Siyum during the 9 days than there is on Erev Pesach. And so a lot to say about Erev Pesach, again, so that we probably won't get too much today, but we'll focus on the question of the 9 days and just that element. So first, in terms of the source, so we just said that the source is a little bit stronger for fasting on Erev Pesach than it is for abstaining from meat and wine during the 9 days. So in both cases, a little bit of a mixture. So when it comes to the 9 days, it's not in the Gemara that we can't eat meat and wine during the 9 days. The Gemara only has it, the Mishnah has it, regarding Erev Tisha B'Av. And it's Machlokas in the Gemara, different prices, whether that's a reference specifically to the Suda Mafsekes, to the last meal that we have before Tisha B'Av. Although this year, as so often is the case, it's Shabbos, it's a different story, but let's say it wasn't Shabbos on Erev Tisha B'Av. So is this a rule specifically about the Suda Mafsekes, or is this a rule about the whole afternoon of Erev Tisha B'Av? By one way or another, that's what the Gemara has, that the notion of not eating meat or drinking wine is specifically about those days. There is a Yerushalmi that has a little bit to say about this also, but in any event, the idea that we have of it extending before, going earlier than Erev Tisha B'Av, so that is found in the Shulchan Aruch and in the Ramah. In the Shulchan Aruch in Tavkuf Nun Aleph, Tes and Yud, and in the Ramah, so there is a reference there to a practice to abstain from meat and wine in advance of Tisha B'Av. And there are various practices that are brought up, whether it's the 3 weeks, whether it is the 9 days, or whether it is the Shavuot Shechalbo. And what emerges as far as at least Ashkenazi practice is the most common understanding in Ashkenazi practice is to understand that it's the period of the 9 days that has been accepted for this minig, not to eat meat or drink wine during this time. But in the same breath, the Ramah there writes in Sif Yod that it is still permissible to eat meat and drink wine at a Sudas Mitzvah. And while listing the Sudas Mitzvah there, so he includes a Siyum Maseches. So there, it seems like here we have it, that there is a license to eat meat and wine at a Siyum, Davka, during the 9 days, within this Ashkenazic practice. Here you have the Ramah saying it pretty clearly. And that you can have at that meal, Kol HaShayachin L'Sud, everyone who is relevant to the experience, which we'll try to examine a little bit more what that means. So it sounds like this is okay. Now there is a little bit of a hint of hesitation in the language of the Ramah, because the Ramah also adds that one should be mitzamsem and should not be mosif, and presumably that's a reference to the guest list, which again we'll say a little bit more about, that we shouldn't have more people than are appropriate. And continuing that, he also says that during Shavua Shechalbo, it's an interesting question whether it is a Shavua Shechalbo this year. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit next week, but you probably need to know the answer to that before next week starts, but sorry about that. But the question whether there is a Shavua Shechalbo or not this year, but so the Ramah writes there that Shavua Shechalbo should be even more careful about not going overboard and have specifically a minyan mitzumsum. So there you get a little bit of a sense that it's not so perfect without any hesitation. But certainly the gist of the idea that if you have a siyum And you're going to eat meat and wine during the course of that siyum. That's acceptable during the 9 days. That is explicit in the same source that's telling us in the first place not to do it. In the same Ramah, so in the same breath, he's telling us that this is a acceptable thing. So it's not like this is some kind of newfangled approach. It's something which is there in the original context, at least as far as our practice, not in the original context in the Gemara or related sources, but as far as the authoritative statement that we find in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, so the Ramah has it in that same breath. Now, there were those who argued on the Ramah. So, for example, in the Tshuva Me'ava, of the Blazer Fleckles, so he objects to the whole including of the Siyum in the Sudas Mitzvah in the same breath, because he says other things that are listed there, the idea of a bris milah or a pidgin aben, so those are things that have a set time to them. So it's not something which you can move around. So, okay, so then if they happen to fall out during the 9 days, okay, so you should have it during the 9 days. But when it comes to a siyum, so a siyum is not in the same category. A siyum you can push off, and he quotes earlier sources to that effect, that if you finish a masechta at a certain time, you can wait until a time that's appropriate for a suda to have the siyum. So, says the Tshuva Me'ava, so you're going to tell me that during the 9 days, that's a good time for a suda, that's a time that's appropriate, it's a time that's inappropriate. So, therefore, he writes that he doesn't think that this is correct, this idea that you should be able to observe a siyum, to hold a siyum dafka during the 9 days, you should push it off. But others disagree. So, for example, the Sefer Taras Chaim of Rabbi Yaakov Shalom Sofer. So he writes that the idea that you can push it off for a time that's more appropriate, so that means that if you want to have a big party and there's a later time when you'll be able to have a more of a chavadik siyum, so you can push it off to that time and that's also fine. But it doesn't mean that you have to push it off. So if the siyum happens to be during the 9 days, so it's not a problem to have it during that time. That's how he understood. Now, of course, there's a lot to debate about that as well. But that was the initial back and forths about this point. Now, also brought into the discussion is a quote from the Eliyahu Rabba. This is from the first from the Shulchan Aruch quote, the Eliyahu Rabba, that whether or not it's appropriate to have a siyum during the 9 days with meat and wine, it depends on how you normally treat siyumim. That if you would normally, every time you finish a masechta, so you make sure to have such a party, you make sure to have basar v'yayin, so then it's understandable you want to do that during the 9 days also. Or at least some have it that if at least you have something special, so you have something special and now you want to have meat and wine, so then that's fine. But if that's not what you normally do, to do a davka during the 9 days is not right. The way the Eliyahu Rabba phrases is efshur. He's not sure. They're not sure it's such a great thing. Others phrase it more strongly. It's wrong to do it this way. But this was also a point of debate. The Taras Chaim talks about this also, and he says he doesn't see why that should follow. So everything is what's going on at the moment. If right now it seems to you that you're ready to celebrate your learning in this kind of a fashion, whatever you did in the past shouldn't necessarily affect that. And there are others who make that point as well. The son of a Korban Asano, Rabbi Yehuda Tayawal, so he writes in his Shuvis that his father, the Korban Asano, so he used to have a practice of being Misayim Sechta with meat and wine during the 9 days. And he notes that he didn't always do that, that when he finished the Masechta, he didn't always make a fancy Siyum, but the Siyum that he had during the 9 days did. So there is a debate about this point as well. And many were makel like this, and many indeed accept just the way it's written, the view of the Ramah, that siyum during the 9 days would be acceptable to allow basar v'yayim. It's brought that Rav Shul of Kutno, he would eat meat on Motzai Tisha B'Av, when we have the practice to extend this abstaining from meat and wine until the Chatzos time of the next day, of the 10th of Av, but he would eat meat on Motzai Tisha B'Av because of the siyum that he made on Sefer Icha. So because he learned Eicha over the course of Tisha B'Av, so he would make a siyum on that and have meat then. So it's an interesting Maaser Rav. So there are many, indeed, who clearly did accept this practice. Now, still within that, there was a big discussion among many of the Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch and elsewhere, that even if, okay, so you can do this, you can make a siyum, and you can have meat and wine, and you could do that during the 9 days, but many assume that that's only if it works out exactly like that. But to manipulate the schedule, to rush or to stall, so that it works out during the 9 days, you go a little faster, you go a little slower to make it work out. So many had big objections to that. The Aruch HaShulchan is one who expressed a great objection to this. In general, he's not so excited about the whole thing. And he refers to the desire specifically to justify, to allow meat and wine during these days through this process as a davar mechur, as something that is very distasteful. And he writes, certainly you shouldn't speed it up to come to then, and if you want to delay, it would be better to delay till after the 9 days and to not have it then. But again, so here this is an area where there are many who are mekel, and certainly there is a minig in many circles to be more lenient about this, and there were many who did find it acceptable, and that's also a part of the debate here. There are some who suggest that maybe there should be a distinction between stalling and speeding up. That, okay, if you're going to stall, so that's a problem. If you're going to speed it up, so okay, so you're learning more. So learning more is always a good thing, so we're not going to tell you that you shouldn't learn more intensely. So some draw a distinction as far as that's concerned. It's very interesting as far as the whole question, as we talked about a little bit recently, of things that look like haramos, things that look like they are ways of getting around things and that maybe they're insincere. So the Minchas Yitzchak has a tshuva about this, and the Minchas Yitzchak has a very machmir stance. Some Sfarim also quote this idea from elsewhere, that if your motivation is just to eat meat and you manipulate the schedule in order to be able to eat meat when you wouldn't otherwise, so not only is that bad, but that's not even assumed. That's not even going to count. It's not going to work. It's going to be inherently disqualified, which is itself a fascinating idea. It's interesting. It relates to the whole question of things that look like haramos, things that look like workarounds. So in general, it's a topic of controversy. And one controversy focuses on the issue of trying to get out of halachic requirements, if that's what's happening. And the other controversy focuses on the integrity of the process, whether what you're doing is genuine or not. So those who have objected otherwise would say that the problem is not necessarily that it's not a siyum, it's that the siyum is being utilized in order to avoid a halachic requirement. So that's what bothers them. It bothers them that it's being used to undermine something that the halacha presumably wants. But here he's saying more than that. He's saying that the process itself becomes disqualified, that it's really not actually a siyum anymore. The way he explains it is he refers to the whole debate about mitzvah srichas kavana, and the Rambam paskins that a mitzvah, the way the Rambam understood, that a mitzvah that doesn't have any other action, all the more so needs kavana. So here the simcha presumably is saying, if the simcha is not about the learning, it's about the meat, so then that's not a simcha shel mitzvah. That's a pretty stringent way to say it, because you could understand that, okay, your motivation is maybe because you were looking for a way to eat meat, perhaps, but l'maisa, in order to do that, so you finish the learning and you have a siyum that is a simcha shel mitzvah, even if what got you there in the first place was your hunger for meat. But to go so far as to say that undermines the actual quality of the simcha is a pretty striking statement. It's also interesting because in the Tshuvas of Rav Shlomo Kluger, Tshuvas of Elif Lecha Shlomo, so he has a similar idea, but in an interesting kind of in the middle way, talking about the question we mentioned before, about what's the threshold in terms of learning, what's the standard that justifies the siyum, how much do you have to learn, what kind of material, how much material, how in depth. So he suggests that the standard changes depending on whether you're trying to use it for a siyum purpose or not. that not the same way we just said that if you're doing it for the purpose of making a seam so you can eat, then that's no good. But he's saying that when it's shalol lishma, so to speak, so then we have to evaluate it more rigidly, that we need it to be a more objectively impressive accomplishment as far as learning is concerned. While if you're not motivated specifically by trying to make a siyum for this purpose, you just want to know what justifies the siyum, so then the threshold could be lower. It wouldn't necessarily have to be as much. That's a fascinating kind of distinction. So in any event, so this is one of the major debates as far as the scheduling. And there's also a very significant debate, which also can cause us some complexities today, as far as the question of who you can invite. So we saw that the Ramah said that you can invite all the shayochim l'suda, whoever is relevant to the suda. So you have to understand what that means. So many mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch write, the Taz talks about this, the Brewer writes about this, that you invite the people who you would invite otherwise, the same kind of people who you would invite if they weren't necessarily looking for a rare fleishik meal. People you would invite to your celebrations overall, so those are the people you can invite, people who are related or people who you have a friendship with. But some of them have a very harsh language that if people who have no connection to you and they're just coming for the burger, so that would be even a mitzvah habavi averi. That would be something that wouldn't be justified. It is clear that you don't have to have learnt the material yourself, that the siyum is not only for the messiah, it's not only for the one who did the learning. It's clear that he can invite other people who he's friendly with, or certainly, as they point out also, people who were supportive of the learning, or people who were supportive even of the event. Rabbi Yaakov Emden talks about this in his Siddur also, that if you want to bring people who are supportive of Torah, supportive of learning, supportive of you, supportive of the meal, okay, so that's all appropriate, and doesn't matter if it's a lot of people. But if it's just to have a big crowd, and people who you have no connection to, so he thought that was a problem. Now, one of the major questions then that comes up is Zman Hazeh, is that they have these siyumim in camps. So generally they invite the whole camp, or at least the whole section of the camp, to come to the siyum. So it's a question of how that fits within the standard. So are you necessarily best friends with everybody in the camp? So here Moshe Feinstein was quoted in a couple of places. He's quoted by the Nitta Gavriel in the Sefer Ben HaMitzarim, and he's quoted also in the Sefer Kitzer Helchos Ben HaMitzarim, and a number of later works, that Reb Moshe understood that, yes, you can invite the whole camp, because over the summer, so that's your chevra. So if you'd have a simcha in camp, so then they would have the whole camp there. And if you have a bungalow colony, so then the people who are in the bungalow colony, that's your summertime chevra. And if you have an event, you'd have it there, and you'd invite the people who were there, so that's legitimate. You can include them in your group. In the Sefer Mekadesh Yisrael of Harfinus, it's a Svarim on all the Mu'adim, and he has a Sefer on Bein HaMitzarim. So he writes that he thinks it's a problem when it comes to the hotels, that if you're going to have a hotel that's going to have a siyum, they're going to have somebody come in and make a siyum and then serve fleishik to everyone there. He thinks that's a problem. So there he thinks there really is no connection between the people and the one being Messiah. And that, he thinks even Reb Moshe would agree to. He quotes that Reb Moshe also. Says, okay, it's one thing to say that in your summer camp, so then you have now, at least for the summertime, bonds of friendship or your bungalow colony, so that people get to know each other. But just you're staying at a hotel for the weekend and they bring in somebody to make the siyum. So that, he assumes, is not going to work as far as it's concerned. So presumably, all the more so, if they have siyumim in restaurants, he's not going to like that either, assuming that people who are coming into the restaurant have nothing to do with the individual being beside him, and they wouldn't have come to his party, wouldn't have come to his event on any other time. So presumably, that's much harder to justify, although maybe we'll come back to that topic a little bit more, and maybe there's a little bit more to say about that, because the truth is, so we have to try to understand that if there are all these objections and all these hesitations, so why is it that it has become so widely accepted. So you could say that it's not widely accepted. So we see that there are many poskim who are not so happy about it and who are very hesitant about it. And it's not just historically, but many poskim today who are very hesitant and very skeptical about siyumim. So it wouldn't be accurate to say that it is completely accepted or that it's even as accepted as the siyumim on Erev Pesach. But to whatever extent that it is, so why is that the case? So why is it that there has been, to whatever degree there is, the acceptance of siyumim during these days? And what about the concern that there is a big clash here between the siyum and the spirit of the law? I think that's what seems to emerge from the objections, that we are supposed to remain plugged into the mood of the avelus, of the Chorban, and to take a break in the middle to kind of escape from the 9 days for these pockets of time seems to clash with the spirit, and that's indeed what drew the intense opposition of those who were intensely opposed. So how can we possibly understand it a little bit of a limitzchus, or a little bit of an understanding of why there has been an acceptance to whatever degree there is of this practice? So first, just to take a step back and try to understand what the spirit of the law is here. So what exactly is the issue of having meat and wine during the 9 days? Now, as we see, it's really a minig, okay, but it's a minig that has taken hold, as it has in the case of certainly the Ashkenazi community during the 9 days, and to whatever extent, wherever you are, whatever minig it is, but that's a minig that certainly deserves to be respected like all other minhagim. So the question is, just what is this minig about? So what's first of all interesting to consider is that we assume that these are nihugei avelus, but we don't have within avelus a prohibition of eating meat and drinking wine. So in Shiva, for example, so there is no prohibition for an avel to eat meat and drink wine. During Aninus, the more intense period, immediately after the Patira, before the funeral, so that's when, yes, there's a prohibition of meat and wine, but during Shiva itself, we don't have that. So why should it be that presumably the 9 days are not more chomer than Shiva? So why should it be that if it's permissible in Shiva, it's a minig not to do it during the 9 days? So some of the Svarim talk about this, a couple of suggestions, for example, in the Sefer Minchas Aaron or Bavaran Miasnik, his Sefer and Ben HaMitzarim. So one suggestion that he has is that maybe it really should have been, but they should have said that even an Avel and Shiva also shouldn't eat meat and drink wine. But there's kind of cross purposes, because during the Shiva, so we have an Indian of trying to be Menachem, the Avel, and his Besorah, that wine is something which is able to comfort those who are grieving. So maybe there's somewhat of a compromise there in Shiva, because there's also the role that meat and wine play towards bringing comfort to the mourner, and that's a part of our mission during the period of Shiva. So that's an interesting point, just to highlight that basic tension there. So it's true that when it comes to Shiva, so we have this goal of Nicham. When it comes to the 9 days, so presumably we don't really have a theme of Nicham. He assumes that Minchas Aaron, that the Nicham, the 9 days, is of a different nature. But the truth is, really, we don't necessarily relate to it the same way in terms of a obligation of Nicham. And probably there is a relationship here, to a point that Rav Soloveitchik emphasized, that there is an inverse structure when it comes to comparing the private avelus of Shiva and the public avelus of the 9 days. That when it comes to personal avelus, rachmana litzlan, so it starts off most intense, and then it goes to decreasing intensity. So it goes from the ninos to the beginning of Shiva, to the second half of Shiva, which is considered a little different, to shloshim, to yud beis chodesh. It gets less and less intense. And when it comes to this time of year, so we have 3 weeks, and then we have 9 days, and then we have Shavuot Shechalbo, and then we have Erev Tisha B'Av, and then we have Tisha B'Av itself. It goes in the opposite direction. It's increasing intensity.
And the way he explained it, I believe, is that there is really, on the one hand, a comparison between the two, but there's also a difference, that when it comes to personal avelus, so the grief is easy to feel and is automatic, and so it's our tafkid to try to comfort the mourner who's automatically going to feel this tsar, that he shouldn't be suffering to that extent, that we try to comfort him. But when it comes to the public avelus of the churban, so we are so far removed from the experience of the churban, that we don't really feel it unless we're forced to, unless the halacha makes us feel it. So therefore, it's not necessary for the halacha to come and let us down gently like there is with the context of personal avelus. It goes in the opposite direction. We need to arouse this feeling that isn't otherwise there, and therefore we go in the direction of increasing intensity, and it gets stronger and stronger as the time goes on. So it makes sense that it's true that when it comes to a personal avelus, maybe there is this notion that we're trying to soften it somewhat with the nichum, and maybe that's where the meat and wine fits in. But when it comes to the idea of the 9 days, we don't necessarily have that as a goal. Some other Sfarim point out also, it's interesting that just to look specifically at Erev Tisha B'Av, where the Mishnah tells us about this prohibition. So the Torah quotes an opinion that you can have chicken at that time, by the Sudam Afsakis, by Erev Tisha B'Av. And the Torah himself disagrees, but the basis of the opinion was that because Basar Of would not have counted for the mitzvah of Simcha Menat Torah of Isamachta B'Chagacha, so therefore it's not a problem to have it in this context. But Lamaisa, it's not the way the Torah concludes, not the way we paskin. So what the understanding is that during this time, there is not just an inyan not to have simcha like there is for an avel, but there is also an inyan to add to the avelus, like we were saying before, that there's a need to make the experience more intense than it otherwise would be. So therefore, it's not just about what qualifies as simcha, but even that which wouldn't necessarily qualify, but maybe we need to abstain from in order to create a greater sense of avelus. So that's necessary. And that's where the wine idea comes from. That's how some point out that wine, like we said, specifically during Shiva, is considered to be a source of nechama. And here we find it prohibited, again, focusing on the Erev Tisha B'Av context. And maybe the idea is because it's not just about avoiding simcha, it's also about increasing evil. So that maybe, yes, there is this notion that we have to actively pay more attention to the Churban. It's also, at some point out, the fact that some have a practice not to wear Big Day Shabbos and Shabbos Chazon, but an Ovel, again, in a personal Shiva, he would wear a Big Day Shabbos on Shabbos. He would consider Shabbos to be an exclusion. So the idea that that should be different during Shabbos Chazon maybe also reflects the idea that there is a active desire to make one pay more attention to the Churban during this time. And it's a different focus than personal avelus and a different process as a whole. Another understanding that the Menachas Aharon mentions there is that maybe the minig is just to extend the intensity, that since the process keeps going, like we said, in that opposite direction, so by the time we get to Erev Tisha B'Av, it's kind of like Aninos, the state of Meso Mutal Lefanov, that you're mamish in the moment, it's fresh. So we treat Erev Tisha B'Av like Aninos, with this idea of the most intense version of no meat and wine. So maybe the idea is we took that mood and we extended it. By minig, we extended it. So it's interesting to consider whether that makes sense or not, because on the one hand, yes, that's often the role of minig, to take a din and expand it into areas where it wasn't necessarily obligatory, so that would be a natural path for a minig. However, it also is going to be a stira to what we were saying before, that if the idea is specifically to have increasing intensity, so then to prematurely bring that on, it should be for Erev Tisha B'Av to bring that on to the 9 days, maybe is a minig that would be counterproductive. So it's interesting to think about just how that fits in. But perhaps we could say a different explanation, which may go a long way to explaining the acceptance, such as it is, of siyumim, and that is to understand that the issue of meat and wine Again, it's not something which we associate with Avelus in the sense of Shiva. It's not an aspect of Shiva specifically. But maybe it really comes from a different point of focus. And the Gemara in Bava Basra and Daf Samach talks about the fact that after the Churban, so there was a movement to say that we shouldn't eat meat or drink wine ever again, at least until the restoration of the Beis HaMikdash, because if we're not going to be able to have meat and wine in the context of the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash, we're not going to be able to have it as part of the Korban Shlamim, we're not going to be able to have it as part of the Avodas HaKarbanos, then we don't want to have it in our personal lives either. And then the Gemara says that that was not sustainable, because if you follow that through, we shouldn't even have fruit or water, because that's also used in the Avodah, it's also used in the Beis HaMikdash. So if we're going to go so far as to say that anything that was connected to the Beis HaMikdash, we're going to eliminate from our lives as part of the grieving, so then we would starve to death. It wouldn't be anything that we could have. So this practice did not take hold, and apparently it took hold in a limited fashion, that we can't handle it forever, but we can handle the meat and wine part at least at least for the 9 days. So what that really highlights, though, is that the idea of meat and wine, it's not specifically about the fact that we're suffering without meat and wine, and that that's the purpose, but that the idea is that meat and wine we want to abstain from because it is associated with mitzvah, it's associated with Kedusha, the Beis HaMikdash. And when we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, so we don't want to have it in our personal lives either. So the idea is not so much eliminating these things as highlighting their association with mitzvah, and that we are grieving the fact that we don't have the opportunity to do them in that context of mitzvah, in the context of the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. So maybe the whole notion of a heter of Sudas Mitzvah, and maybe especially perhaps the Siyum, as we'll discuss a little bit more, is that this isn't necessarily a escape from the 9 days as much as it is emphasizing, at least temporarily, for a small part of the time, one of the elements of the 9 days, and saying that we are mourning the fact that we don't have the opportunity to eat meat and drink wine in the context of Mitzvah, in the context of Kedusha. So we davka want to do that during the 9 days, and that, or at least that'll be the only way that we'll have meat. So we won't have any meat of rishus or wine of rishus, but when it's for the purpose of a mitzvah, so that is maybe not a escape from the 9 days, but that's an emphasis of what the 9 days is about. So perhaps that's somewhat of an explanation of why we would embrace this as a positive thing, that looking to learn and to celebrate Talmud Torah and to only have our meat and wine in that context of a celebration of the mitzvah, and specifically of Talmud Torah, maybe there is something positive about that. And indeed, you do find that, particularly in Hasidic circles, so there are those who davka went out of their way to have siyumim during the 9 days, and there are different ways of explaining this. Some are more Kabbalistic, and some are a little bit more down-to-earth. The Lubavitcher Rebbe specifically recommended this, the Talmidim of the Besht, had a practice specifically to make siyumim during these days. The Klausenberger Rebbe has a tshuva where he writes that the main avelus of the Churban is the loss of Torah and spirituality. So the notion of trying to restore that and to celebrate that is perhaps a reflection of this idea that we are looking to emphasize one of the themes of the 9 days. And it's also striking that among the many suggestions that you find in the Sefer Chasidus, so the Chidushi Harim is quoted as saying that specifically not just the Talmud Torah, but the gathering for Talmud Torah, the fact that you make this asifa for the Siyum, so that is there to counteract the Sinasrinam, that if we are in Galus because of Sinasrinam, so if we create a gathering around Talmud Torah, so many of the themes of the Galus are being addressed in a positive way, and therefore specifically it is appropriate. There is a fascinating tshuva of the Mishnah Sachir. It was Rav Teichtal. So Rav Teichtal later became more well known for his sefer on Zionism. He became a Zionist and wrote the sefer Im Habanan Smecha. And before that, he wrote Tshuvas and other svarim under the title Mishnah Sachir. And he has the tshuva that was written in Tammuz of Tavshin of 1940. And he said, didn't say exactly where he was, but he says this was in the middle of World War II, middle of the Holocaust. And he and his chevra, they finished Masechta, and it was time to make a siyum. And he said, there are people among the chevra who said we shouldn't make a siyum. How could we be celebrating when look what's going on in the world right now? And certainly, if we're going to have a siyum, it should be very small. It shouldn't be meat and wine. It should be very limited. And he has a long, beautiful tshuva where he says that quite the opposite is true, that this is not the time to skimp on the siyumim, that there is a tremendous message of Avas HaTorah and Avas HaBrios that comes out from the Siyum and from our being Machshir of the Siyum, and Adarabba, that if the world is in such a terrible place, so that's all the more reason to do this. That's all the more reason that this should be upheld and that there should be a Siyum with everything that comes along with it, and that through that, it should be a source of protection for us. So that notion that there are very important themes that are being emphasized and that that could be a schus to reverse the galus, and he is talking about a different aspect of the galus there, that it was being felt all too strongly. But says the schus that we should have to be able to turn the galus around will come from being machshir of the siyum. Even the Aruch HaShulchan, who we mentioned before, is very negative on the siyumim, but he writes there that if it has an impact of creating more Talmud Torah, so then that is a positive. That is something that may make it worthwhile if it's something that is going to increase Talmud Torah. So that's itself something to think about as far as the whole message here. And maybe seeing the abstaining from Basar V'Yayin in this way, so that perhaps could also explain the fact that we observe this abstention until the 10th of Av, that we go past Tisha B'Av, and then we go until Chatzos. It's also different when it's in Nidcha, but in general, this goes until Chatzos, because the notion of Rubo Shel Hichal Nisraf, the Beis HaMikdash was still burning into the 10th, and the idea of having that by itself, even after Tisha B'Av, is perhaps a reflection of facts, not necessarily from the Nihugim of Avelus per se, but it would be kind of a little bit anticlimactic to have that after the big moment of Tisha B'Av. But rather, it's basically while we are noting the Churban, so we are going to stay away from meat and wine unless it's the context of mitzvah. And therefore, that keeps going as long as the Churban went until the middle of the 10th in order to highlight that. So that's a idea also perhaps to consider. And again, all of this, there's still tremendous objection. It didn't solve all the world's problems, still tremendous objection to this human. But maybe that's a limud zchus, maybe that's an explanation on some level as to how it has become accepted. I mentioned before that the siyumim that they have in restaurants, and they have throughout the whole day, the restaurant stays open, they're offering siyumim, so it's hard to really see that within the spirit for a lot of reasons, and not recommending that per se, but maybe there's a limud zchus of that also. Perhaps there is a literature about the whole question of fleishig restaurants staying open during the 9 days, and whether that's justifiable or not, saying open and serving fleishigs. And Rav Kook was quoted as having paskined that if there is a environment where the only kosher food is coming from this restaurant, and if they're going to close down during the 9 days, so then the non-religious people are just not going to eat kosher, so then it should stay open and provide the fleishig food even during the 9 days, and perhaps even the observant people should eat there as well, if I remember correctly. So there's a lot of literature about this in different directions, but to the extent that there is such a notion of trying to be mezakeh, the people who wouldn't otherwise be eating kosher, to provide meat even during the 9 days. So to provide a siyum on top of that, however tenuous the connection is, but provide a siyum on top of that presumably only helps. Now again, it doesn't mean that we recommend people who are looking to have the optimized churban experience should be going to such a siyum, but the presence of the siyum in such an environment maybe is better than nothing, as far as the extent that there were poskim who allowed the restaurants to be serving meat in the first place, so to be serving it in the context of the siyum is probably better. Now, if that means that people are going to end up having less connection to the churban because of that, because they otherwise would have been eating kosher and we wouldn't have been having meat, so it's a different story, but perhaps there is what to consider even within the spectrum of that. So one thing we do know is that the notion of being Mulamitz Chus is always a benefit, but certainly especially during the 9 days and the 3 weeks, it has an extra value to it. So however we decide to conclude in our personal practices, that's one question, but there's always a maila to being Mulamitz Chus. So, in the schus of our generosity, a spirit of judgment of others, we hope that the Kadosh Baruch Hu will be melamed schus on us, and that we shouldn't have to have this shaila in years coming forward, and we should only be able to celebrate on these days as well. So I wish everyone a meaningful tekufa of the 9 days. Probably next week we'll talk about something presumably Tisha B'Av related as well, but feel free again to submit your requests, and I wish everyone a meaningful tekufa that should bring about Yeshua's for Klal Yisrael.